Welcome to Skip This Podcast. My name's Luke.
And my name's Brownie. We're just a couple of mates who decided to get together and talk about our own mental health.
Along the way, we'll chat to some real people and hear their stories and advice on how they deal with mental health.
So if this doesn't sound like it's for you, feel free to skip this or listen. Oh, I don't really care.
Check, check. One, one, two, two. Check, check, check. One. Good.
That voice you're hearing there checking is our guest for today. We did actually just finish a session of recording, but we thought we'd pump a few out to sort of round off Mental Health Month that were really sort of special and important to us. Our guest today is a devoted husband and father from the Northern Beaches of Sydney who knows the importance of mental health and fitness in this day and age. He is making massive waves in the mental health space, pun very intended, with his involvement in the Head Above Water 24-hour swim for mental health. He's the founder of Peer Here Mental Health Support and a guest we've been really excited to spend a full episode with, ladies and gentlemen, Pete Burge.
Oh, my God, that was
wow,
really good.
I'm impressed. Yeah. It wasn't even my intro.
I looked out. I thought, is he getting that from like a bio? I didn't send him a bio, but that was
no, I forgot perfect. My laptop and my iPad, so I'm doing everything off my phone. So I hope I don't seem rude.
Not at all,
if I'm
mate,
looking
that
down
was,
at my phone.
That was
heaps.
Really nice. I liked it.
Yeah. We had the pleasure of having you on during our 9-hour, what was that, 9-hour challenge? I almost said 24 hours. That would have sucked.
Felt like 24 hours.
Our 9-hour challenge down at Fitsum about a month and a bit ago.
Yep.
And we kind of got a little bit of an insight into what you did or what you do with Peer Here Mental Health and being an amazing raffle sponsorship and prize, which I'm sure the person who has won it has gotten some good use out of that.
If or not, they, I
if
can't
not, they will.
If not, they will. This is a reminder to whoever won the that prize. We can look back in our archives.
Yeah, but that Peer Here aside, we saw you as a really interesting person and wanted to get a little bit of an insight into who Pete Burge is.
Pete and I met through a mutual friend, big fan and listener of this show, Paul Brennan. Shout out to Brennos from Sandbox Media. I think he's one of the guys who listens to each episode as fast as they come out. And Pete and I met a couple of months ago, about 3 months ago now. So this podcast has been in the pipeline for a little while, and Pete and I just kind of really hit it off, and a big part of kind of why we did hit it off was nothing to do with Peer Here, but it was kind of his journey as kind of a bit of a bad boy and not a troublemaker, but kind of made some bad decisions. You were like in the action sports industry as well. Like, you're only a couple of years older than me, but so you kind of led this kind of, you mean you, he led the lifestyle you would expect someone who spent 10 years as a paid snowboarder to kind of live in an action sports athlete, because that's what you were. And then that kind of put you into a pretty tricky place by the end of it, or throughout.
Yeah, we probably have to go back before that as well. So just to get really, you know, open and frank.
Yeah, just, and you can go as deep or as shallow into this as you want. We talked about it before. So over to you.
You know, when, I don't know about you guys, but when I was in year 12, and I was just terrified of what was going to happen after the HSC, because I'd see my dad, right? And I'd see him go off to work and, you know, nothing seemed to faze him. But when I was a young fella, well, growing up at least, and probably, you know, to some extent still have had those traits, but, you know, super shy, insecure, you know, not really sure of myself, not much confidence. But so when the time came to, I started experimenting with, you know, drugs and alcohol and stuff like that, all those feelings went away. And it was that moment of, and I always think about when we were talking about before, going back and forth, in retrospect, you know, what was I doing in regard to that drinking and drugging? Was I self-medicating the mental health side of me, you know, being super shy and anxious and stuff like that, and lubricating myself with, you know, various psychoactive substances to make me feel comfortable, to make me feel as though I could fit in with the people that I wanted to be around. And, and I've got this, there's this saying, you know, I judge people's outsides by my insides, right? And so all you guys look super confident to me, but I felt like a shrinking little violet inside. And so when the the feeling was taken away. I thought, well, you know, this is what I'm, you know, I'm supposed to be doing. And it got to the point where it was good at first, but at a very young age, I had to go to rehab, and it was probably the best thing I could have done, because of where I was going. I was going to end up dead. Mm. And what it did is really teach me who, it really gave me a special insight into who I was, but it also helped me realize that who I was okay. Because I really beat myself up for the person that I felt that I was, because I was that shy. And
yeah, then that's the sober version of yourself, not exactly. The party boy. Yeah,
yeah, yep. yeah, exactly. And so it was after that that I ventured into the action sports thing, because again, I'd done this introspective work on myself at rehab, but I don't think I got to the crux of what I really needed to do and what I really needed to find out.
Yep.
And so I went out and did things that I thought would make me seem, you know, a cool guy to talk to, and
yep.
You know, did things that on the outside seemed as though I was kind of building up esteem from external.
Yeah. Essentially, you're living this fake life, right?
Well, it kind of wasn't a fake life, but I was really loving it. But I just my high school life was just such a you know, obviously it wasn't super bad, but it was just really fraught with a lot of indecision and confusion. So when I finally found this niche of being a snowboarder, I was like, well, wow, this is
sick.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. You know, and I saw my old man come home from work, you know, super bummed, and I was like, I'm just not doing that.
Yep.
And so, you know, after I'd sort of clean my act up, I ventured off, and so that's how that happened.
Yeah. And so that's about what age are you there when that kind of you dive into that? Because
so I was in rehab at 19.
Yeah.
And I finished the snow years at 24, 25. Yeah. And
there's some more trouble after that though, right?
Before. Yeah. Yeah. So. More trouble. I saw this never-ending trouble.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Luke sitting here just kind of transfixed because it is like it's an eerie, like he's walked an eerily similar path to me. Like, and that's like what I said at the start. That's why I gravitated towards, because I was just kind of in awe of where he came from to where he is now. So I want to kind of set the table of this kind of journey to kind of what he's doing right now compared to what he was doing back then. Is like it's. Edge of your seat stuff, so please continue. Cool.
In terms of, I guess, my behavior around still that, you know, that the self-esteem and stuff was still, you know, taking a beating in terms of, you know, the beating myself up around some stuff. And it wasn't until, you know, when I got, had a, met a girl down here who's my lovely wife, Kate, and we got married and we had a child and stuff. But it was after then that things really started to, I guess, the stuff that I didn't address at 19
was really back
a really, really big way. I was like I was wrestling with a gorilla, you know, and I guess it really talks to kind of some of the stuff that I'm doing now, because back at 19 and back, you know, when I had postnatal depression after my son was born, you know, I didn't feel I had anywhere to turn to, and I didn't have anywhere, I just kept, and you know, especially the prime example is that, you know, I kept my nervous breakdown to myself.
Yeah.
You know, my wife was, I think she knew something was happening, but I just kept it all in because I wanted to be the provider, the man that, you know, that whole toxic. Well, it's not, well, not trying to, not, you know, wanting to be a father and wanting to be the man's not toxic, but trying to live up to that toxic masculinity.
Yep,
toxic we've heard masculine, it so much with so many guests on our show that are dads and stuff like that. And
Well, you were, you yourself, right? Same, like yeah. you kind of you forget about looking after yourself, and that's where these again, like it's that stupid kind of what should a male be and what a male is in reality is very different. And I think Luke was kind of battled with that for a while, and it was his wife that would tell us, hey, get around Luke. He doesn't even need to talk about it. He just needs his mind taken off things. Mm. So it's a common theme. Chris Lloyd and even Mitch Woods, our guest on the last show, was talking about the same thing, that you got to kind of look after yourself, and as a husband and a father and a provider, you sometimes forget about that.
Well, just to quickly, as an aside, we're brought up probably by fathers and mothers whose fathers had PTSD from the war, right?
Yep.
And, you know, very different ideas around parenting and stuff. And, you know, technology and all this stuff would go on and on. But anyway, the way it related to me was that, you know, I was having these, I don't know if you've ever had anyone on the show that's had postnatal depression, but the way that it manifested itself in me was really, really horrifying and disturbing thoughts. Mm. So, like, wanting to throw my boy off the veranda, wow. Drop him, hurt him.
Yeah.
And shit. I thought I was jats. You know, yeah. I thought, you know, there's going to be.
And that's why you're not sharing it, right? Because
well, that's right. I'm like, if I share this with anyone, they're going to think,
be locked up.
Yeah, I'm Gornski here. Yeah. You know, white coats, white men in a van and stuff. And so, and because of those thoughts, I was just having these panic attacks, and it was living hell. Mm. But anyway, I sought some advice, and it took me a long time because, as you say, the thought of telling this to someone was not something that I'd ever thought of, dreamed of doing.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that is not an option for people, just to kind of say how you're really feeling.
Yeah.
But keep going.
And I'll get – remind me to talk to you about the stuff that still happens but is totally fine because of – well, it's totally fine with me because of what I went through with this psychiatrist, right? And he sort of really explained to me so we went and saw a psychiatrist. We got on a standby list, and that's a really good way. It's a tip for young players out there. If they've got like a 3-month waiting list, just say, can you go on a standby list or cancellation list? And you usually get in within a week or two. Mm. And because, you know, my wife said, look, it's dire straits over here. We need to do something.
Yeah.
I'm going to take them to hospital.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you're thinking of throwing your child off a balcony, you can't wait 3 months to talk to the professional about it, which is kind of a good lead into where we're going with Pierre here.
Yeah. But. Yeah. And so he sort of asked me some questions, you know, have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? And what, you know, and asked me what I did and all that sort of stuff, you know. And at that time, I was head of TV at a place called the Australian Channel, which wasn't a channel, it was a production company, but it was, you know, I was had about 18 staff, and there was a head of digital and all that sort of stuff. A lot of pressure and all that sort of gear. And he said, mate, you know, you're a conscientious young male and you've just got massive control issues, because for you to be out of control is unacceptable, right? And so throwing my child off a balcony is just behavior that for me would, you know, my psyche would be totally unacceptable. That would mean I'm out of control.
Yeah.
So thinking it makes me think that, you know, I'm, you know, I guess this whole rabbit wheel of you know, neural craziness just caused all this behavior caused all these feelings and reactions in my body. And but after hearing that, he said, mate, I've seen 1,000 of you, you know.
Yeah.
This is just
textbook,
you know. You know, as I said before, young bloke who had a significant change in his life, and you're experiencing, you know, some postnatal psychosis, and things are going to be okay, but you know, you've got to do some work and stuff like that. And he asked me, and I don't know, some of the listeners might relate to this. So, because the other times, you know, I can, and this will happen today, right? And which I'm totally fine to say, but I can be at a wedding, right?
Yeah.
And it comes in my mind to yell out, "Don't marry her, she's a fucking slut," right? It comes into my mind, right? And I would never ever say that, right? But because it comes into my, you know, because I'm such a control freak, or, you know, I'll be at a funeral and I'll say, oh, he was a dickhead. You know, I think of yelling.
Does that sound like someone else in this room?
It does. Except you don't, you hardly ever reel yourself in.
So no,
you
just say it. That's the fucking problem. No, hashtag no filter.
And this, and so this guy had asked me all these questions. And this is going back to psychiatry. He said, have you ever done any things? Have you ever, and that's the thing he asked me too. He goes, have you ever been, you know, chopping up carrots or something in the kitchen and thought about just sliding the knife into your wife? And I went, yes.
Oh, shit.
I know. And he goes, yeah, well, mate, it's, you know, that's kind of the sort of, you've got
think
these.
Think it, you're not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've got all these ancient, another psychiatrist described them as ancient thoughts, because back in the day, that's what, you know, when we were, you know, throwing rocks and killing bears, you know, we probably had to do that sort of thing to make sure that the, well, not kill our wives, but you know where I'm going.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but years ago when I first got with my now wife, she detailed the way that she would kill me within our first few months together.
How was that?
It was so detailed that I was like, this is, you know too much about this. You've thought about this way too much. And looking back in moments like this, I look back at that and go, yeah, well, she's obviously had thought, hasn't she?
Yeah.
She's even told me about it.
Yeah.
So the fact that you can think about it, you can talk about it, doesn't mean necessarily going to do it.
That's right.
Or at all do it. But even our son's professor, some of the things he's told us that he has thoughts about things, and it's just like, that's our professor that's telling us this. Like,
so it's totally okay.
Normal. Yeah. It's okay.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I was sorry to cut you off, Luke.
No.
That, and I walked out of that room like just thinking, oh, my God. Because, you know, I've had these thoughts since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. And that was, again, part of the reason why I guess gravitated towards, you know, self-medicating and coping mechanisms.
Yeah, well, it's the old drink to forget, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that was definitely my last 12 months in America was definitely drinking to forget.
That hamster wheel of death, I'll call it. So, and for then it was kind of like party time, you know, and because I kind of went, well,
I'm cured.
It's just this mental health thing. I'll take some medication and everything will be fine and I'm cured. But I've got this, well, they, you know, if we're talking medically here, they call it like a bit of a dual diagnosis, you know, mental health issues plus some addiction issues. You know, you can live with addiction and you live with mental ill health.
Yeah.
So, it just again got to the point where I needed to get some professional help again, and so I've had periods of my life where, well, I'm 45 now, and I've been clean and sober longer than I've been drinking and using.
Yep.
So, but you know, so big chunks of clean time, and yeah, again, as I said that last time that I thought I'd have another shot at the title. Haven't I've stayed, you know.
Yeah, where you at? Five.
Yeah, five. Five. Well, wherever old. Oh no, what is that? I don't know. 5 or 6 years, something like that.
Which is your second child. You don't even count. You don't even count the numbers and days anymore.
Yeah.
Like I'm counting 25 days without booze, so I got a bit of work to do.
And on this journey to get where I am now, I know that I'm still. Definitely still a work in progress. I went 2 weeks, just the prior 2 weeks that we've just had, not sticking to my routine.
Yeah.
And I've got to stick to a routine because when I don't, and I'm just so retarded sometimes without, can you say that word?
I don't know. You just did.
I will not, sometimes I'll stray from my routine and my routine involves, you know, getting up at 5, which sounds early, but when you go to bed early enough, it works. Going, doing some exercise, doing some reading or something, playing with the kids and then getting to work, you know.
And some meditation.
And some meditation. I forgot the old 10-minute car map.
Yeah.
And now doing some sleep hygiene as well to get me some sleep. Proper sleeping, because that was the other thing that was stopping me from getting up so early, because I'll go to bed and think, oh, bugger it, I'll just watch Netflix till 2 a.m.
Who's that sound like?
And,
guilty.
And
it's like so I'm looking at a mirror here.
Seriously is, yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm still a work in progress, but I know myself super, super well. I know my triggers. I know I can catch myself before I go down the, you know, the rabbit hole of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'm able to realize that when I'm in relationships with people, catch my sort of controlling behaviors, you know, wanting to be in control, other things around, you know, sort of making up stories in my head about, you know, how, you know, what I should be doing in this relationship and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I can say that, you know, with hand on heart today that, you know, I'm as happy and as healthy as I – well, not as healthy. I should be at least 12 kilos lighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it's 6 kilos per kid.
Is it?
Yeah.
Like you get like a little dispensation.
Well, that's what they say.
A little credit.
Well, it shouldn't be.
Yeah, I need to have like 4 kids right now, and then I'll be at goal weight.
That's opposite.
Opposite.
You put on 6 kilos.
Yeah. Oh shit! No, I don't want. I need to have -4 kids.
Yeah. But my thing, you know, and again, you know, being pretty frank, you know, one of my things sort of without drugs and alcohol is my relationship with food, you know, and it's and eating late at night while I'm watching, you know, some Netflix type, because that's what it'll treat. Oh, mate, bowl of cereal, you know, beautiful.
What's the weapon of choice on the cereal front for a late night binge? I used to be a big Cocoa Pops fan.
I'll do Milo, I'll do Carmen's with Nutella, I'll do like cashew nut butter with cereal, so good. Well, I'm an NFL freak and like I watch Good Morning Football, which is on at night, so I pretend it's the morning and I'll eat my cereal. But anyway.
He is sitting here in a San Francisco.
Niners.
Let's call Niners.
Yeah, caught my eye as soon as he walked in.
Yeah. Yep. Do you know what the 49ers stands for? What it means?
I'm going to go out and say that someone was 4'9". The first mayor of San Francisco was 4'9".
Gold rush of 1849. Oh. They all went to San Fran.
Oh.
So you were 49er up here for the gold rush?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and hence why there's gold in the logo.
There's gold in them hills.
That's right.
Didn't know that. I've been a 49ers fan since I was really little. So.
Yeah, well, there you go. But, yeah, look, got two beautiful boys, Ben and Finn, you know, my darling wife who's Cade, and Ben's 12, Finn's 10, and you know we're blessed to live on the northern beaches, and at the moment, you know, involved with something that is really aligned with who I am and my values.
Well, so let's get into that.
So you finished that snowboarding journey, dabbled in some advertising and some production, and now
20 years of that.
Dabbled in that for a little while. When did tell us first what is Peer Here, and when and how did that kind of become what it has become?
Okay, I'll tell you how it became what it became. So I was in the gym, and I see a therapist. I have to.
There's another one, listeners. Not afraid to admit it.
No, mate, if I didn't have my therapist, I would be. Yeah.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here at the Matthew Talbot Hostel. Yeah, we wouldn't be here.
And I was running late. I was at the gym and I thought, it'd be good if I could have a phone call with her or, you know, do a video call in the car or something like that. And I thought, you know, that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started from there. But because I think, you know, as I'm a massive advocate for people, you know, seeing someone, having an external referee to, you know, untangle your thoughts, untangle, you know, what you're going through, try and, you know, differentiate, you know, facts from reality and how you react to stuff. But I just thought that, you know, if it was more easier to access, that more people would do it. And so we went down this path where we were going to do clinical therapy. So this again, so clinical therapy is your psychologist, your psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had this other thing called peer workers. And peer workers are people who are trained, qualified. Some have psychology degrees. Some have master's degrees in social work. Other people have got like diploma in counselling and stuff like that. All the people that work for me anyway. But they have a lived experience of mental illness or addiction or both, probably both. And so they've really walked in your shoes. If I, yep. when I, the, you know, the your that I'm talking to, who would be looking to, for support.
Yep.
And so it works on, you know, one of the biggest, the most successful, you know, I guess the 12-step programs. You know, it's a, you don't, the person who knows what you've been through really understands. And mm-hmm. sometimes that medical model of someone having, you know, sitting across the desk from you or sitting across from you in that room who has that sort of, you know, professional look about them and
can be a bit intimidating.
Talks about treatment yep. and yep. talks about diagnosis and puts yep. labels on you and stuff
yep.
can be quite a scary process to go
absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely.
And so what we've done now is made it all peers and they're their peer counsellors. And so the gap in the market that we're trying to sort out or service is that imagine that you have, just say you're watching Nath on a Monday night, right? Mm-hmm. And this is you 6 months ago.
Yep.
And you've just had your third glass of wine or your sixth beer.
Yep.
And you're like, I don't really want to be doing this, but there's relationship stuff going on. There's work stuff going on.
Yep.
You're kind of homesick.
Yep.
You could call Lifeline.
Yep.
And talk to a crisis counsellor, but yeah. I'm not in crisis. I'm don't want to top.
It's pretty intimidating.
Yeah. But do I really want to go to a GP and say, you know, should I put my hand up and do I have a problem? Do I want to investigate if there's a problem? And then do I want to go through the paperwork of getting, you know, the subsidy, and it could be a bit of a ball ache to go through
for
all
sure.
that. But
an expensive ball ache as well.
Yeah, well, that's right. And then again, it takes eight. It's documented to take eight sessions for you to find someone who.
We just actually talked about that in our last podcast, and Mitch Woods, the high performance coach, he was just blown away. It was a stat that you and Gus Wallen have told us about. It's a mind blowing stat that how many people do we lose along the way, like one through seven, who just give up and go down further down that rabbit hole. I don't even like to say where that could end up or likely ends up.
And so Nath, who will just go, you know what, I'm going to continue to self-cope, I'm going to continue to self-medicate and just keep pushing whatever is coming up down,
mm-hmm.
which leads us to where it leads a lot of us to, which is, you know, relationship problems, work problems,
depression,
addiction problems, depression, anxiety and all that sort of stuff. And it's just got to stop.
Yep.
And so by providing that middle ground, which is a softer entry, that you know you're going to talk to someone immediately, and I'm talking about immediately, that gets what you're going through. And you can, we've got 15 of them on at the moment, and we're going to build more, obviously, or get more peer counsellors on there. Who, and you can look at their profiles, and they could, you know, so they, it ranges from, you know, having parents that are looking to talk to someone about their kids having psychological distress, or someone having addiction issues, or someone having anxiety issues or issues, or PTSD or bipolar. So there's all these realms of I guess labels, and I guess me saying this is kind of not really giving peer here a, you know, it's kind of doing it a disservice because we don't like to use those names, but just for, I guess, for...
we've got to dumb it down
for the
purpose of this exercise,
exactly.
for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And so, but it's, we all go through, you know, different levels of psychological distress in certain parts of our lives. And if we can nip it in the bud, talk to someone that really understands, develop a relationship with that person that really helps us get on with our life and realize that we're okay, then I think that we could, you know, make a difference in a few people's lives.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had a drive around the website, and I know, like, when it took me number three, my psychologist Gunther, who's been on the podcast before, he was my third guy, so I got lucky. I got third time lucky. I love on Peer Here. You read these, like, a deal breaker for me was like I didn't want to talk to a female, so that was kind of my only kind of pre-stipulation of what I wanted to do. But other than that, I didn't really have a choice. It was just the GP sent me to these three different guys. But like on Peer Here, they have this little 1-2 paragraph description of their lived experience. And I think that is like where this Peer Here is, like, forget the fact how like I told Pete, it's too cheap. Like it's too affordable because it's such a brilliant service. But you get to kind of read these bios and just say, yep, I would be able to relate to him. And you see a photo and like, you don't judge a book by a cover, but like you can have a first glance at someone who you're going to tell your deepest, darkest secrets to. So if you don't like the look of them or you feel like they might be a little too old for you, or, I mean, they're never going to judge you, but I mean, this is a service for you. So ultimately you can pick apart every single bit of it till you're comfortable to tell your story to a complete stranger. And I think it's just a brilliant service that, I mean, it's kind of almost taken COVID to realize how important this was and why kind of everything sped up. I know Pierre here's been in your head a little while longer than that. And just to see this brilliant thing. And again, like the guy who's leading it has kind of had one of the most inspirational life stories. And the fact that he can come on here and tell that story, like, how could you not back this guy?
100%. I was thinking about it earlier, and we do like to delve into the past because I feel like it gives us an insight into so many different journeys that people have ultimately gotten to the same goal that we're at the moment, which is trying to get people to talk about mental health as well as doing it ourselves. And it's funny that
there's no textbook Google
way of that everyone's been through this. Like, I've met people who have had perfect childhood. Like myself, I had a great childhood, and it got to a point later on that I was having issues talking about mental health because of a few things that ultimately happened and it triggered it. And then I've spoken to people who've had terrible childhood who have always openly talked about their mental health. And then the opposite, some that don't. So there's no textbook way to end up in this situation. But to think about having somewhere that is just so accessible like Pierre here to go to for anyone, any background, it's a no-brainer for me. And I'm amazed that there's nothing like what you've created yet.
Yeah, there's one that's been funded by the government called Being, but that's, again, it's blind. You ring them up and you just get whoever. The big part for us is our education. We've got an educational piece to do.
Ringtone.
and the platform, and we haven't been huge on the marketing just yet. We're just starting now to do some content marketing around some of our key messaging, but because the platform at the moment is in its kind of first iteration, and so it's going to get better, you know. Like, so at the moment we're going to streamline it and put filters in there for search, so it gets even more tailored to, you know, what you're looking for when you first get there. Because, you know, that feeling of being connected with someone is what, I guess, generally what we all want out of a therapist, absolutely, right? Out of someone that we can talk to. Because if we don't, I know people have been in therapeutic relationships for 2 years and not like the person that they're talking to.
Yeah, wow.
But they go there because the GP told them to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know, I think as well for me, like I had two kind of fail therapists over in America, but the first one was 100% my fault because I was going there because I was told to go there. I was not going there ready, willing and able, and didn't probably speak the whole truth. And it wasn't till I got to Gunther who I just kind of felt so comfortable just opening up the book, which is in turn open up the book for everyone. I used that analogy way back at the start. I gave the keys to unlock my mind and what goes on in there, and it sometimes isn't the best stuff, but now everyone has that key, so I can't lock anyone out of it anymore. And I think just having those first initial chats are so important, and with your service just being so affordable, it's one of the things. I just finished a mental health first aid course
with Stevie Gamble
from Mananka, absolute legend guy. And one of the big things that stops people from going to see is a cost thing. That's one of the six kind of triggers to stop people. Like, you got the embarrassment, the fear of being locked up, fear of being judged, fear of losing your job, fear of losing, you know, your family and your relationships. And then it's money. Like, how can you put a price on, like, making sure your mental health, like, unfortunately there is a price on it because psychologists and the like are expensive, but this is essentially entry level for and peer here might not have 100% of the answers, but that person, if they can't get you the answers, they're going to put you
well,
in the right place.
Well, that's the other thing, yeah. We've got, you know, referral pathways, of course, but the thing is that the studies that are coming out of the States, and there's a couple of professors over here, is showing that it's the results that they're getting are as good, if not better, because they're the ones that really. So, to give an example of how they work in the community, so if they're out there at a hospital, at a psychiatric hospital, you know, so you've got your peer counsellor, you've got your psychologist, you've got your psychiatrist, you've got your mental health nurse. But the real nitty-gritty conversations are having with the peer counsellor, because that's they have cups of tea with them and they talk to them all the time.
Yeah.
And so they're forming that bond, and I guess that's what we're trying to replicate.
Yeah. And I think as well for kind of my personal journey, I've almost like Gunter is fantastic and stuff, but I get so much from having a chat with you. You know, like, you and I, like, I've called you when I've been a bit down just to have a chat. And that's kind of part of that lived experience you've had, and you can really relate to this person, and that's what these people are on peer here, because you read their story, like, you've got to tell them, like, there's this guy, like, had the drink driving charges, and there's another guy, just constant relationship issues, bad anxiety and depression as a child and a teenager and stuff. Yeah. So you just gravitate to multiple people on this website, and it's just, I mean, a credit to you, man, for kind of coming up with this idea. And I think it was once a passion project for you now, and you just put so much man hours into it, and probably not reaping the financial reward that you deserve to be, but I don't think that's a factor in why you're doing what you're doing, is it?
No, look, I had to get out of what I was doing. It just wasn't, you know, you get to a point where, you know, we're at this age, I guess, we're on another stage of life, and I need to be doing something, you know, because it's for my mental health as well. I need to be in a position where I'm really engaged with what I'm doing, and I'm really happy to get out of bed in the morning to be doing it. And I've just had so much fun, and, you know, people like yourselves being so supportive, I can't thank you guys enough, as well as, you know, the people that, you know, my marketing team that are working with me, that are just looking after me.
Yep.
By not charging me the full rate and stuff. So shout out to Kaylee and Alex and Dave, James. It's...
Well, you know you're doing something right when people are giving their services for free or cheap, right? I mean, 100%. I think, you know, that's like, we go down to Fit Rob at Fitsim, and he just lets us have the gym because he believes in this and wants to be a part of it. And I think that speaks volumes of what the people, and I know you and I have chatted about a bunch of other stuff, and I'm going to volunteer to help do some work with you, and just kind of, because I want to follow him into war, for lack of a better word, not really war, peace. I want to follow him into peace, mental peace. We might not have world peace for a little while, but we can have our own mental peace.
That's awesome. So peerhere.com.au is where people can go.
That's the place.
You've got options to select your peer worker,
so you can choose your peer counselor. And then you can choose it for half an hour, which is $40. You can choose for an hour, which is $75. You can choose a free session. We're going to be doing, just about to do some subscriptions, which are only going to be for 6 months, where it's going to be $200 for 6 months. That gives you as many sessions as you want, track your progress and all that sort of stuff. So it's just a place where, you know, I want to create not just a place of connection, but more of a movement and really show, you know, create, you know, because in some parts I think we've sort of lost our life's guardrails. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we've got places like, you know, what you guys are doing and Gotcha for Life and Peer Here and stuff.
We're all rowing in the same direction.
And if we can all make a big dent in this suicide rate and this mental health, or this mental ill health, What do you want to call it?
And you know, the stats are coming in already, and it's going to get worse before it gets better with kind of COVID and the kind of the irreparable damages that it's done in a lot of places. But places like Pier here are going to be the kind of things that do repair the damage that's been done, and you're literally like within 5 minutes you can find the person you want, and it's pretty much same day service.
Yeah. Within 10 minutes you can be connected with someone. So and that's the other thing, that's mental health doesn't wait for an appointment, right?
Yeah.
When you are in that position, because if you go to the GP and, you know, a week later or 2 weeks later, you're kind of not feeling the same. And why am I really here?
Yeah.
There's a whole – we could talk for hours and hours.
Well, Nate, like I've seen Nate go through it where he'll be super motivated to do something one day and then not so
fun will be off, yeah.
The other day. And it's like people would always be in that situation where they'd be motivated to go see someone and they'd have it, okay, I'm going to go do it. And then they'd go see the doctor. Okay, you booked in for 3 weeks. 3 weeks comes along and they're like, eh, I feel all right today.
Yeah.
I don't go.
Yeah.
And then it's just this never-ending cycle of dips and waves of emotion. And I love the fact that it is instantaneous, because you're going to pick up all those people that on a whim or have finally gotten up the guts to actually just go, okay, I'm going to talk to someone. And bang, you're talking to someone.
Yeah, and we're going to, as kind of part, Peter's kindly donated, I think we're going to do two. Pete, you just tell us what
don't package. Get it wrong.
No, I don't want to get it wrong. So Pete's going to tell us what the package is. We're going to talk about it openly now, but we're going to give it away discreetly. We're just going to have, if a listener wants to reach out to any one of us to say, I'd like to pick up one of these. Prize seems a little bit weird to talk about it. Call it a prize. It's more just a
bonus.
An opportunity.
So 3 1-hour sessions with whatever peer worker you'd like to. It doesn't have to be the same. You can have 3 sessions with 3 different peer workers.
Mm-hmm.
All free, of course. And, you know, you can make that into 6 half-hours if you like. And the other thing, if you are a person who maybe you're a parent that's listening to this, or you're a sister, you know, or a brother, or a mate who you know is going through something,
it's transferable.
It's just give us a call. Yeah.
So Pete, peers can obviously get in touch with you to jump on board as well. It's not just a service for guests or people wanting to talk about mental health, but for the actual peers as well. Yeah,
anyone who's trained in peer counselling, psychology, got lots of experience, they can just and of course, you know, the most important part is a lived experience of mental illness, just get in touch.
To me that is really important.
So what let's just talk about that just a little bit more. What is that, because of your personal experience you wanted these people to have these lived experiences? Like why did you, like, it's such a strange, like, I just like consider, like, I shouldn't put Gunter in this category, but like psychologists and the likes, they just seem like they're so switched on. Like nothing's ever gone. Like they're the smartest. Every room they walk into, they're the smartest person in the room. Life's been pretty good for them for the most part. I mean, that's probably I'm probably painting a little bit of unfair picture.
No, I can see where you're going. I know what you mean.
You see what I'm trying to say. So,
and that's where the barrier comes in sometimes, I think. Not for everyone.
Yeah.
Because everyone, you know, so there are people out there who are probably super educated, super smart themselves and go, I want to see the best psychiatrist out there.
Yeah.
Fine. Then that's your choice. And all the more power to you.
Yeah.
But for us, it was about some research that we'd done and talking to a psychiatrist, and he was telling us the importance of the peer counsellors in the, I guess he called it the stepped care model.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, really giving anyone the opportunity and the choice to pick who they received their support from.
Yeah.
And that's because it's a career, it's, you know, it's a TAFE course, it's part of the mental health industry. So I just thought that looking at the success rate of, you know, what peer support is in general, you know, around the world, the success of the 12-step traditions, you know, group therapy, all those things that really sort of came together to tell me that this is probably a way that I think can just get people across the line.
Yeah.
To put up their hand.
Yeah.
And get a bit vulnerable, yeah, and get a little bit, you know, expose themselves a little bit so that they can,
yep,
you know, reap the benefits of getting to know themselves a little bit more. But and the thing to take that barrier away is knowing that they have that same experience as you. Mm-hmm. They've felt the same way. You know, yeah, they haven't been able to get out of bed for days on end.
Yeah.
They haven't been able to walk on into a room because they're so anxious.
Yeah. They've drunk driven their car into a retirement village and, exactly, and yeah, that type of thing.
Yeah.
That's a story for another day.
Well,
you've told it.
All those situations that we're all too embarrassed to talk about.
Yeah.
And we're just forgetting the humanity of yeah, who we are. We're forgetting that.
Yeah, that empathy word that just is, yeah, is probably the most used word of 2020, thank fucking finally, is just being empathetic to those.
Well, I think I might be totally wrong here, but the situation I see it beneficial in is for really specific sort of tendencies that someone's having, like whether it's following a drink driving incident or whether it's after having a child or something like that. And you don't want to go see a psychiatrist that doesn't have kids or a psychiatrist that doesn't drink.
Like, yeah.
You straight away are going to go, well, you don't understand.
Don't understand.
So,
and you're going in then with a closed mind straight away, right? So yeah, you go, like you just, I think you just said it, like your walls are up as soon as you get in there. And I think like I said just before, I did this mental health first. So I'm now a qualified mental health first aider. And one of the first, it's the algae theory. And one of the first things is to kind of assess and assist. And it's, and be empathetic and compassionate and try and help them find the avenue to like acknowledge first that there is a problem. Let's get your help. And this is such a good starting point for peer here. It's like you don't have to go to your doctor, your GP. You can just go straight to here and it cuts out a step. And like you were saying, I could be brilliant one day and not so brilliant the next. Those feelings come and go, and that's the reality of it. And then if you can get to this person at that exact moment, it's like, fuck, yes, I'm gonna be able to unravel this kind of this mental health problem that I have.
Just starting the journey, right?
Yeah.
You want to start the journey, and it is for people too that have had.
It's the hardest step.
Well, that's right, but maybe you've had a less than great experience with a clinical psychologist, and you know. So yeah, the options are there, and yeah, again, just really thank you guys hearing me and hearing my story and letting me promote a little bit about what we're doing, because I'm rave about you guys, and thanks.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah, and I mean it's definitely not going to be the first not going to be the last time. It's definitely the first. No, it's the second time. There definitely will be a third time that Pete will be on with us, because I think we're along for the ride with Peer here now as well, like not just the podcast, like me in particular, like Pete and I spoke for 40 minutes on Monday just having a chat.
Yeah.
It was just a cool, like another lived experience that I was kind of battling with the cigarettes and the alcohol at the moment, not having them, and I was just kind of picking his brain on
how. Well, there you go. That just speaks to what you just asked before. Yeah, yeah. It's like you went to Pete because you know he's had experience in that field. So you're straight away comfortable before you even started saying anything.
Exactly right.
No, that's great. I honestly can't wait to see the big things that Peer here does in the community. And
Don't forget us little folk.
Yeah, I'm glad we've been a part of the original sort of promotion of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, guys.
No, yeah.
Great being here.
Thanks, Pete. Shout out to Breno's as well.
We've got to get him. I texted him before and he said he couldn't. He wants you to call him back.
Yeah, I want him to call back from 9 o'clock this morning. I'll tell him I had a shit day. he's funny. Like, we were wrapping that up, but Paul Brennan Breno's is the mutual connection. He's a couple of years older than you, I think.
No, I think he's younger than us.
Oh, shit. I better get that right. He's not younger than me. No way.
Well,
he's
45. So you're
yeah,
not
I think
even 40.
Yeah, you know? No, I'm 38. I reckon he's 42, 43.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll love that. Let's call him 37. Re-edit that, Goldie.
Yeah.
And he,
I'm leaving it.
And no, and he credits Skip this podcast about having this way more open relationship with his group of friends, his group of 40-year-old friends, because he can do that, how you going, mate? And it's that second follow-up question. He's just like, and he's got this brilliant, like I would have said, just this brilliant life. He's got his own struggles as well, but more importantly, he's this awesome tool and pillar of strength for his group of friends. And for me, he's another guy I get life advice from because he is such a just great bloke and
good man.
He's a really good man. I think he will would love to come on here because he's got a good story. He's a Tiger supporter though, so I don't know about
nothing
that.
Nothing wrong with that, mate.
You know who's downstairs? We're going to go say good day to Kevin Hardwick.
Oh, Kevin.
Yeah. Shout out to the loft. Pete, legendary man. I finished on a tangent, so my Adderall's wearing off.
That's great. Thanks for coming down. It's been pleasure. Awesome. Everyone, if you can check out peerhere.com.au, see if it's for you. It may not. It might be for you, but... it's an awesome website and
we're going to do a bunch of stuff on our socials to 100%. when these episodes
speaking
go
of
on.
Our socials at Skip This Podcast.
Yes.
You're the Facebook page manager.
I don't know the Facebook page.
It's
made it. It's at Don't Skip This Podcast Skip This Podcast
has
taken.
Yeah, someone had taken Skip This.
But yeah, you can find us pretty much on all the socials. Yeah. You search for Skip This Podcast and we're on Spotify and
we
Apple
need
Podcasts.
Reviews, don't
we need reviews still. Yeah, we need them. It's our key to getting up further and getting more of an audience to hear us. Yeah. So anytime someone does a review and leaves
we'll
a comment,
$2.
It's awesome. We will not give them any money.
Oh yeah.
But
not
allowed
to. That's illegal, isn't it?
maybe. Pete, thanks for coming, mate. It's been awesome.
Legendary Pete. Thank you, mate.
See you later.
But
see you, Nath.
See you, Luke.
Love you.
We love you too. We never really chatted, but good to see you.
Straight to the crux, these two episodes.
Yeah.
No fucking around.
We'll have our own catch up later on. Love
see
you, buddy.
Bye.